Hello, my friend, and welcome to this episode of A Call to Leadership. I'm Dr. Nate Sahle, your host, and I am so glad you are here. Have you ever worked for a toxic or cancerous leader? Have you worked in an environment as a leader with toxic individuals in the workplace? What do you do? Do you let it continue to grow and possibly destroy your organization? Or you do something about it? Well, this is the episode for you. If you've ever thought about that or wanted to see what should happen if it ever does creep up in your organization, stay tuned as I invite Joe Thompson back on the show. We unpack and deliver some answers that just might help you get out of this mess. I'm Dr. Nate Sahle, and this is A Call to Leadership. Joe, welcome back.
It's nice to be back.
It's so good to see you.
I always enjoy being on the podcast.
And I always enjoy you being on the podcast, and our listener enjoys you being on the podcast. Of course, I usually say listener. However, we're on social media. We're on YouTube as well. And so our viewer have the opportunity to see us as well. And as we continue our conversation on generosity, our last time we talked, there's the opposite of generosity, especially like in the workplace and in life. Those in the world who, someone listening is going to be like, yes, I know someone like that. I have experience. I have worked for someone like that. I might have someone in my immediate family or life like someone like that. We're talking about the person who's toxic. And it's a tough conversation because you think, you don't ever want to call someone toxic, but there's toxicity in behavior. There's toxicity in choices. And there's toxicity in outcomes. And you're a guy who likes statistics and data, some surprising data that I just thought was just wild. You think about, okay, how many people, how many employees report working for leaders who are considered to be damaging and toxic? Is it 1 in 5? Is it 1 in 10? No, it's 64%, according to a 2020 workplace survey. 64% of employees reported working for leaders they thought they considered damaging or toxic. That's more than 1 out of 2. Does that surprise you?
No.
Because?
I see it a lot.
You see it a lot.
The word damaging, think about that. That's the furthest away you want to be as a leader, like to damage someone.
Right.
Because as a leader, we have that responsibility to help others, promote others, challenge others to be better. And when you think about toxicity and damaging, it paints such a cruel picture of what a bad leader can be.
Yeah. And that's what you want to avoid in a workplace. We use the old term damage control, right? It's a cliche. But we want to eliminate damage. Why? It sounds simple. We need to talk about it. Why is damage not good?
Well, think about a tree, right? Plant a little seedling, you water it, it's going to grow. Now think about every so many days going out and chipping away at the bark on it. Sooner or later, you'll kill the tree.
Right.
And that's what a toxic leader does. They chip away at people. It might not even be like all at once, like in your face, like obvious. But when we say leaders too, I think we're really talking about managers, business owners, maybe teachers, government people, politicians. All of those can have damaging effects on the people around them because they hold a position of authority. It's a scary place to be if you're on the receiving end of that toxicity.
Yeah. And someone listening is there right now. Perhaps someone listening is on the other end and they're listening like, you know, I might be the person you're talking about. Don't stop listening.
Definitely don't stop listening. But I find that most toxic people have no idea that they're toxic.
Yeah. In fact, that's one of the assessments, if you will, of toxic leadership. They don't know. They're not self-aware. And it's not even on this list, if you will. But I've seen it to where it's kind of the opposite of emotionally intelligent. There's a number of factors that emotionally intelligent people have that toxic leaders don't have. Emotionally intelligent people are self-aware. Mm-hmm. Toxic leaders are generally not self-aware. In fact, generally, as you said, they think they're doing just fine.
Well, everyone else has accountability for it.
That's exactly right. Back to what you were saying about some of the damage that's done. And here's another study in Gallup said a primary reason for employee burnout, 23% of cases was toxic leadership. It's about 1 out of 4 people who burn out as a result of that same leadership issue. This is an epidemic. I mean, when you're looking at the scale of it, if you can identify and say, of a minimum of 1 out of 2 leaders, whether or not they fit the bill all the way around, it's irrelevant because that's the perception. The perception is this person damages or is destructive to my ability to work harmoniously in a healthy environment that's safe. That's staggering.
Mm-hmm.
You can't under-explain this. You have to take this so seriously, how critical it is in the workplace. That means that likely half the time you go to work for somebody, you're going to work for someone who you consider is toxic.
We kind of change through generations. Each generation kind of picks up something and it becomes their cause or calling card or whatever. And we find that like the newer generations are more accepting of people. They're more in harmony with each other. Yet this toxic leadership goes on and on and on. It keeps continuing and continuing and continuing with people woke and alert. Why do you think it continues to plague companies the way it does?
Yeah, it's a brilliant question. I think that there's a lot of reasons to dig into. I think starting that conversation, we should start it with asking the question, have you ever worked in a company where there was toxic leadership? Can you recall along the journey? We've been around the block a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Can you recall any instances where you worked for someone maybe not full-blown toxic, but there were tendencies of toxicity?
If I didn't refer to a particular job, but I could refer to toxic people,
mm-hmm.
because in big corporations, you'll have lots of toxic people. And I don't think they know it. Like, I really don't think they know it because they're not self-aware. They're not aware of others. They definitely lack any kind of empathy in order to relate to people. And I've seen a lot of toxic people, but there's something driving the toxicity. And I think with a lot of these folks, I have made breakthroughs with by just getting to know them and where they're coming from. So they're behaving in a way that's toxic to other people, most likely because they're protecting something, defending something. They have a preconceived notion of how things work or how people are going to relate back to them. So it becomes this constant like barking dog of emotions. And I think as servant leaders, it's us that should be serving even toxic people, because through that servitude, through understanding, through showing them empathy, sometimes you can really whittle away at what causes the behavior. And people will reveal that stuff to you. If you're emotionally mature and you have the capacity for like other people to complain or tell you their problems, a lot of times you can kind of figure out what it is that's driving them to be toxic, and then hopefully give them ideas and practices or show them examples of how to be a good servant leader. And hopefully you can change it.
Yeah, I think like in a way you're talking about detox, right? Detox.
Yeah, really. Right. Yeah. Detox. Yeah, it's great.
And so like as you're speaking, another way we describe toxic leadership is cancerous.
Mm-hmm.
And some forms of cancer can be mitigated. They're minor. Or perhaps skin cancer, if we're going to use some analogies. Some types of cancer are simply too invasive and you're not going to be able to get rid of it. You have to discern that. Now, it doesn't mean you don't have empathy. It just means that you have clarity. You asked me earlier, what, in my opinion, what some of the triggers or the factors for, toxicity being in an organization? Well, I'm going to tell you it's top down or bottom up, as we like to say, from a servant leadership perspective. And oftentimes people think servant leadership is a weak form of leadership because you're supposed to just open arms with everyone and kumbaya, and let's just have a flower and meditate on the flower. That's not servant leadership at all. You can have flowers, but servant leadership is about boundaries. It's about protection. It's about mission, vision, values. It's about having the fortitude to stand for what matters in how I best lead this organization from the perspective of, am I providing the tools and the resources necessary for everyone to accomplish the missions we've all agreed to? That's the heart of servant leadership. And so servant leadership is not weakness. It's meekness in some ways. And meekness is not weakness, it's power under control. You don't have to wield the sword because you're not threatened. And so when you look at how toxicity begins to develop in an organization, I think in some ways, and this isn't comprehensive, but I think in some ways, we've let our guard down as an organization in terms of what is most valuable. Is our highest priority for the promotion of progress a safe environment where people can do their best possible work? If that is a non-negotiable, then toxicity can't exist in that space. Cancer cannot exist in that space because by its definition, there is a fear that I will be threatened by some kind of a loss. Just with some of these statistics, it damages well-being. It decreases job satisfaction, increases high stress levels. It increases turnover, lower job performance, anxiety, depression. These are all results of toxicity in an organization. Clearly, those are not fundamentally acceptable for high levels of performance. So when you have an organization that's allowing that, we have an organization that is either not clear on its mission, vision, and values, or those mission, vision, and values do not address those fundamental needs of an individual to do their best possible work.
I like you comparing it to a cancer, because I've used this verbiage before with managers I've trained and, through leaders that I've encountered. I always tell people, be a scalpel, not a hammer, when you're in authority, right? So cancer is something that you'll treat it in any way that you can, but worst case scenarios, you have to cut it out, right? I like to take concepts and show people the actual reality of those things. So I'll give you an example of something that I've dealt with just recently. So you have two people, not in leadership, not in management, all right? And what they'll do is they get in a tiff about something, and then that can kind of grow, like a cancer grows. But the worst part of cancerous relationships or toxic relationships, even at the most basic level of a company, is that when someone is against someone else, the first thing they want is an ally, because they want to be told by somebody, oh, you did the right thing calling her names. That was okay.
Yeah.
That you guys threw staplers at each other. So if I'm a toxic person, I'm going to go build my team of all my little people that I can gather around at the water cooler and tell them, hey, can you believe what Nate did to me the other day? And I want all them to agree. And you're on the other end. You're doing the same thing. This is how cancer spreads in a company, right? So one bad employee can start to just destroy the morality of a company. It doesn't matter how much belief a person has in the company, because on a human level, we want to relate to other people, right? So if you come to me with a problem and I want to relate to you because, I want us to be friends and everything, probably what I'm going to do is be like, oh man, I'm really supporting you. You were right in this, right? Because
you're looking for a coalition.
Of course. So now how far does that go before, as a leader, owner, whatever, you have to cut it out of there?
Yeah. I mean, like factions in an organization. Yeah. It doesn't make sense, but you see it.
You do.
And there's a clear set of behaviors, and you've identified one of them. Another one's lack of transparency. Toxic leaders often withhold information for the clear purpose to manipulate according to their agenda. I mean, listen, sabotage is one of the oldest forms of war, and they keep others in the dark about important decisions while, again, like you said, illuminating it to some, hey, you know what? I'm going to let you in on something.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know this.
Yeah. Make them feel a little special.
Yeah.
But it's all manipulation. It's just all a source of manipulating someone, not leading them, just manipulating
them. It's division. It's divisiveness. And this is one of the issues, not only in any organization, but in any group, a family, a community, a religious organization, two friends. I had a conversation with a colleague who I've been working with for many, many years. And there was a conversation that got into that colleague's ears that was a distortion. And there was such upset because there was this feeling like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that after all these years that we would have these kind of problems, that I would have these kind of problems with Nate. It got around back to me. And I messaged my colleague and said, hey, can we talk? And we talked it through. And through that, we realized that this other situation created division, which was completely erroneous. It wasn't even real. And it galvanized the requirement, the response, in terms of identifying and thwarting toxicity, is to get things out in the open. get the truth out, speak what's really happening, get some transparency, and let the cards fall where they may, because otherwise you have the backbiting, you have the undercurrents, the negative undercurrents in an organization. I remember learning about an organization, and the CEO would say, this is one of our core values is that there's no whining. This is a no whining company. Can't whine, period. You want to work here? No whining. You can have challenges that we're going to overcome, but looking at it from the perspective of we're problem solving rather than simply complaining. And it changed the entire culture of the organization. Because when you're whining about others, you're developing coalitions about your own personal agenda. And at the end of the day, it becomes about you.
Think about a divorce couple with mutual friends, like mutual.
Oh, that's a good one.
When there's a divorce happening, it's even almost a joke in movies that, you know, you have to pick. Who are you going with? You know, what team are we going to be on? And that same thing takes place, like you said, in a family or in a marriage. What do? You want to insulate yourself, you know, with the people around you, and you want to feel better about the choices you're making. Because when I tell somebody, hey, Nate was really mean to me today, and they're like, oh, well, you know, he shouldn't be that way. He should know better than that. Well, now I'm getting that comfort and support because maybe I'm just making the wrong decision in our friendship. Maybe I'm not trying hard enough to fix it. Maybe I'm walking away from something that if I was completely transparent about what happened, I may have some, you know, naysayers like, hey, maybe, you know, you didn't really give Nate a chance, or maybe you should rethink this direction you're taking. And, you know, you don't have to divide up your friends. But there's so many names from toxic people, you know, the pot stirrer, you know, cancer. It's just however you recognize it, don't give it a second longer than you need to. Okay. Because that is one thing that you can't overcome sometimes if you can't change the person at a core level. So like a lot of times owners, entrepreneurs, managers, they don't really have the time to walk down that walk I was telling you about of, you know, getting in that person's head, seeing what makes them tick, trying to save them for the company. A lot of times the company doesn't have the resources in order to survive that. So if you're in a place right now and you have a toxic employee and you see it clearly, but you don't have the time or the resources to fix it, I would say let that person go as soon as you can. Because what then happens is the people someone is toxic to, okay? Because toxic people, they lash out at all kinds of people. They don't pick one person. They're all over the spectrum. And if you could hear behind closed doors, I'm sure a lot of people are talking about this toxic person. But it's a weird thing. What happens is that even though it's just this one person that's causing it, it becomes a break in trust from employee to company, because now the company is not protecting me. The company is allowing this to happen. What kind of company hires a person like this that treats other people this way?
Yeah.
Right? You think it's this isolated incident where, oh, you know her. She's angry with everybody, or, you know, he always says some backhanded comment to people. It's not going to be him or her that you're dealing with now. It's going to be your trust that you're, it's called corporate trust. Yeah. I mean, it's a trust that your employees have that your company is going to do the right thing, not only in its business plans and not only in the way that it hires, but also in the way that it fires and gets rid of those kind of problems.
Couldn't agree with you more. And I am completely in favor of clarity, clearly set boundaries, because if it's a cancer, you have to set the boundary, especially the toxic kind. We'll go as far as the boundary will let them go. Mm. I'm talking to the leadership team. I'm talking to the ones who establish the parameters, the principles. You have to protect your organization from toxicity, from cancer. One of the ways you do that must be clear, and I mean crystal clear. Communicate your expectations, establish what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, and assertively address those inappropriate behaviors, and immediately be respectful, be professional, but be quick with that scalpel. You must demonstrate to your followers that you can be trusted to lead them safely as you embark on your desired destination. As you said earlier, people are looking for that. They're looking for you to set the tone for how this organization runs. And if you don't stand firm on protecting those individuals, they're going to go someplace where they can be protected.
So let me pose a scenario to you, and you tell me what you would do. Because I think the time to fire, I think quickly firing someone has some different time structures depending on what the company is. I like to take things to extreme, like, you know, get rid of them tomorrow. But in reality, get rid of them in the time that it takes to not damage the company. So there's our timeline. We don't want to make a rash decision and open up a situation where a job isn't being done and it's going to cripple the company in some way. So you have a business that's highly dependent on sales and its sales team. Okay. And you got a dozen or so salespeople, but you got this one star.
I mean,
star sales guy. You're going on a nice vacation this year because of this guy. Like, he's really pulling it in. And you start to find out, man, he's kind of not a nice guy, right? He's a little mean and condescending to people, and paint whatever scenario you want. He's your most successful employee. He's your most successful salesperson. He's making the most commissions. He's providing the company with the most money. What is the tipping point to when we say, hey, look, it's not worth it? What transpires that says, okay, you know, he may be pulling in 80% of the sales, but I'm going to just cut my losses, get rid of them, and hope that I can survive or find another superstar?
Yeah.
Because this faces a lot of people.
If someone listening right now is like, hey, that's me. That's a situation I'm in right now. It's a phenomenal question. And it's not an easy question to answer. You know, you can't just be nonchalant and carte blanche and say, oh yeah, well, this is what I'm going to do. Because that's just not how business works.
When your money is affected, when your livelihood is affected, you know, you will pause and take a look, you know, of what's a good time.
Yeah. First step I would take is I would pull this individual in and have a talk and express that, hey, you are our number one salesperson. You are stellar when it comes to closing. You're responsible for whatever percentage of our gross sales. You're killing in that area. However, that's not the only measure in how we measure success in this organization and how we measure not whether or not someone is a fit for this community, this ecosystem, this culture. In fact,
and you're falling back on vision and culture now.
I am. Here's where I go. So one of our key principles that you signed up for is to care extraordinarily. In fact, that's our very first principle in this organization. And right now, you're at a one there, and you can't be at a one if you're going to be a part of this team. You have to be a minimum of a seven. We can get you to a 10, but you have to want it, and you have to begin to work toward it. You have to commit. And if that's not something that you desire to hold as one of your core principles, I understand. And it will be really difficult to see you gone, for you to go on and embark on a journey where you can be a part of a team that embraces other principles than these. But if you are, and you really desire that, and you've got some areas that you want help in growing in to get there, let's roll up our sleeves.
So let me be devil's advocate.
As you would.
So the response to that is, hey, Nate, look, I love the organization. I love what I'm doing, right? But I'm busy. I don't have time to coddle these people and ask about their weekends. Come in, do your job. You don't have to talk to me, and let's go home.
Is that what you think caring extraordinarily is?
I care about this company. I care about my job.
And what is this company?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. I thought this company was to make some money.
This company is people. Not only internally, but externally. This company is a group of stakeholders. You're one of them. Our suppliers are one of them. Our clients are one of them. Our employees are one of them. Even the Internal Revenue Service is one of them. And to care extraordinarily means to set my own self-interests aside for the collective interest. And that's going to be really tough for you because you're money motivated. Money is a byproduct. You'll make money, and you might even make more money if you put the care before the pocket.
So anyone listening, that is the perfect way to respond to this type of person.
Oh.
So write it down, go back, replay it. Because sooner or later, you're going to run into this. Even someone who's mildly good at their job nowadays believes they're great at it, right?
Right.
Occasionally, you have to remind them that, hey, you know, the toxicness that you have, you can be passively toxic. don't know if you've had employees like that before, but they don't say very much. You know, they don't really interact with people.
They're stealth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's just enough of what they do to put off someone, or they have like a superior attitude towards people. Dealing with those people and wanting to keep them in the organization for their skills. Like, we appreciate your skills. And the way you're out there selling tells me that you are a person who can develop skills. And being with your team and talking to those around you and being professional and courteous to everybody, it's another skill. I know if you could learn to be as good of a salesperson you are, you could learn to be a good cohort to others. So that is a problem I face in a lot of organizations that I go into. You know, there's like some genius that they petrified to get rid of because the place is going to fall apart.
But you're hitting it right in the head, because what happens is you don't have to get rid of anyone. This role playing we just did, I wasn't terminating anyone. I wasn't giving anyone ultimatums. I was simply explaining what the criteria was for continued movement in this direction was. You make the decision. I mean, you're the one that signed up to work here. You saw what the principles and the values were. You agreed to uphold them. Now it's your decision.
And when you talk about continued growth, right? Well, how are you going to grow me as a salesman? I'm killing it out there. I don't want to grow you as a salesman. I want to grow you as a leader of this company. I want you to be a leader to like the other sales. I want them to look up to you. I want them to respect you and admire you. I want them to love you, right? Mm. And they can't do that when you wall them out, or you're condescending to them, or you think your time is more valuable than their time, because we're all here for the same thing. Yeah. So let's see what kind of sales leader you can be, and not just a salesperson. Yeah.
And some people will see it and they'll make the turn and the pivot, and some people won't.
But you did the right thing by trying to set a boundary in which it can be fixed. Even if you're saying, let me help you with that. Let's meet once a week. Mm-hmm. Instead of going over your sales numbers, because you're killing it, let's go over some things you can do to position yourself as more of a leader here. And let's see where that grows you as a human, as a salesperson, as an employee, as a future business owner yourself. You never know what you'll accomplish. Oh, it's so funny. I'm speaking with someone today about a situation where I had an employee who was constantly late. I'm pretty lenient on being late, but this particular organization, you could not be late for a lot of compliance reasons. Okay. And the girl that was in the situation, she was a single mother. And she always had some reason. So no matter what time you set her at, she was always a half hour after. So I asked her one day, I said, you know, does this job help provide for you and your daughter? Okay. Because if it's just a hobby, then like, I don't have anywhere else to go with this. I got to get someone else. But if it's really a job that's providing for you and your daughter, then I want to know that. So she says, yeah, of course it is. And I said, well, the first thing I want to do, I want to express how important it is that you're on time. Like, that's very important. I said, and whatever it is you're doing, like whatever it is that's keeping you from going to bed at night, or whatever happening in the morning that's keeping you from coming in or waking up or whatever it is, that's all time that you're spending doing that. Now, if you didn't have a job, what would you be spending your time doing? Looking for another job. So what would you rather be doing? All of the stuff that you're doing now, looking for a job, or just coming into work on time and providing for your daughter? I will come in and work on time. Okay, so we both agree. And that rang a bell with her.
Brilliant.
No more trouble after that. So you never know when you try to approach in the way that you did, if you're going to hit that, you know, magical button that makes someone go, man, you know what? That's true. I could be better at that. Yeah. I want to be better at that. And that's that emotional maturity that allows a person to make that change. When they can't make the change, they're wrong for the organization. They'll probably never make that change, but always try that approach.
Agreed. And the way you bring it all together as we close, it's really a matter of us leading well. The way I see it, we're either illuminating or eliminating. We're eliminating pathways that don't lead us to our desired end state, and we're illuminating pathways that do. And it's up to us to communicate those effectively in a way that helps people to see a better pathway for their own journey. I mean, and that's, I think, the heart of being empathetic while being real about what's possible. and giving people an opportunity to step through that door on their own or a different door. And knowing no matter how difficult it is for us, i.e. the situation with the sales leader, that'll hurt sales. But at the same time, a little bit of chemo might put me out for a bit, but the cancer's gone. I'd rather live another day than have a good few days and not see another in a year.
Yeah.
It's good stuff, man. You know what? Well, before we go, though, I have a little bit of a different take on lateness. This is like the after hours rule. So I look at lateness as a breach of contract. If it's been explained that this is the time you arrive, then that is an obligation that we've contracted. In the same way that we've contracted an obligation for me to compensate you timely. And so one analogy then is to say, hey, how would you feel if for every minute you were late, I was late a day on paying you, and then half an hour was 30 days late? How would you feel about that? And your typical employee would say, I'd quit.
I'm quitting you. So it's funny because my take on being late is if you're in a position to allow flexibility, allow the flexibility, because I think it puts them in their best range there on where they can work and where they're best. But if it is a contractual, you know, you have to be here because if you don't, X, Y, and Z can't get done and we can't start work, then yeah, I would definitely take that as a good way to explain it to someone.
Yeah, I tend to look at it as we've made an agreement. And depending on your level of commitment to that agreement, granted, there are going to be situations that are, I'm going to say, beyond control. But the majority of the time, it's literally a matter of how much of a priority this was to me. And so when the priority level decreases, my effort level generally tends to decrease as well. So you've heard the saying, if you're on time, you're 10 minutes late. Some people say that, right? I'm one of those people personally. Like, I abhor being late. And God blessed me with a spouse that's not the same. So over the last 25 years, I've had to find a new zen when it comes to getting places together. But when it's up to me, I'm going to be pretty early. I'm going to be in that parking lot. I'm going to plan for my car to die. Or this morning when I was getting ready to come in to work, I drove my son's car. It was parked outside and the battery was a little weak last time I drove it. So I brought two sets of keys, one for his car and one for mine, in case his car didn't start. I didn't have to lose 4 minutes in going back in the house and getting my keys because I just didn't want to be late. I think when you start to think in those terms, you're setting a precedent for honor and respecting a commitment. And it shows. I've had folks in my camp who were chronically late. And I had to make the conversation with them, like, look, you're chronically late because you just don't care about being on time. It's not a priority to you. Because if your life depended on it, you better believe you would be here or the lives of others you cared about. Mm-hmm. And so when I had those conversations and I say, you know, my life depends on getting you paid on time, the life of this business, because I'm committed to it and I won't ever stop being committed to that. And that changes an understanding of just how important this commitment is, because it flows into everything else in life. You know, the more we walk in integrity in terms of what we say we're going to do and actually following through with that, the more we can be trusted.
I hate to have to be more than one place in a day. And this is why. Because in my particular business, you're constantly asked questions, right? You're constantly being asked to break things down. Just like this podcast got off onto this. This is what often happens when I'm in a company. Like, it will go a different direction and it eats up time. And if I can't give them like all of it, like if I can't finish the whole thought or make sure everyone in the room understands, I'm going to be late to the next appointment. It's going to happen. So I always try to pick one company a day.
Yeah.
Be there. Even if I have like a doctor's appointment in the morning, I'll put a good 2-3 hours between my next appointment. Yeah. Because when you're consulting people, it's so easy to run off and it goes over and they want your time there.
It is. And I think that's where it's up to us to give ourselves some grace in our margins.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right? I made that mistake for years.
Actually started doing that. You'll see that when we have appointments, especially when they're virtual appointments, they start at the 5 minutes after the hour. And people are like, why do you start an appointment at 4:05? You know, it's always 05. And you'll know Nate's appointments are always, why? Because there's margin there. Because especially with virtual appointments now, if someone's in your office and say you're running long an appointment, they're in the other room, they know you're there. But it's like an eternity when you're waiting for someone to open a Zoom room. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, it's 4:01. Mm-hmm. It's 4:01 and 30 seconds. It's 4:03. Oh my goodness, we're not going to show up. And you're trying to wrap a conversation up, like you said, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, I've got this other appointment and it's 3 minutes ago. And you want to be cordial and polite. So I just started giving myself grace and margin. It's like, hey, look. But now I found that works. Because mm-hmm. now that there'll be 4:04 and just going on 4:05 and that conversation will be over. Boom, click end that, click start that. Guess what? I am right on time. And so I think it's also incumbent on us. We've totally transitioned. I don't even know.
This is bonus.
This is bonus. Yeah, this is bonus. Yeah, you could have stopped at 33 minutes, but now you're going all the way to 45 and 46 minutes. This is like the end credits. After the end credits.
Yeah. This is the behind the scenes chit-chat we have afterwards.
I think it's important to give yourself some margin in that and then demonstrate it with your people.
I agree. And the same respect that I forward someone by talking to them later and then showing up late into an appointment, I'll probably repay that respect to that company. Mm-hmm. But I really don't like to disappoint people. And I made my schedule way too tight at some point. Because I didn't want to disappoint people, and I wound up disappointing everybody every day. So, yeah, grace is the key.
Yeah, to bring it full circle. That's literally one of the opposites of toxicity. Because toxic behavior expresses a lack of accountability, as you had said earlier. And what you're doing is you're taking complete responsibility for your actions. You're saying, hey, look, you know what? I'm not going to blame others for my failures or shortcomings. I'm not going to deflect any criticism. I'm not going to deflect mistakes. I'm going to apologize and say, look, you know what? I had a very tight schedule and I spent a little more time than I expected to with my last set of clients. I really needed to make sure that I got them taken care of and over with. And now you're up.
So what anyone listening didn't realize is we did this on purpose so that we could come back around to toxicity. Bonus.
Always good to have you, bro.
Good to be here, man. I love being here.
Well, my friend, I am so thrilled that you joined me on this episode of A Call to Leadership. And before you go to the next episode, especially if you're binge listening, take a moment. I would love to get your honest review right here on your screen. Your feedback is so important. It helps the podcast. It encourages me and it helps me. It helps me to give you more and more and more value. So I can't wait to read your review. I can't wait to be with you on the next episode. I'm Dr. Nate Salla. This is A Call to Leadership.